Committee on Energy will come to order. Let the record reflect, it is 3:05. It is Thursday, February 3rd, and we are in room 124. Currently, the members present are Representative Peterson, Representative Lynn, co-chair, Representative Foster, and myself, chair of today, Representative Pruitt. Let the record also reflect that we do now have a quorum to conduct the state's business. I would ask everyone to please turn off your cell phones or your smartphones, as they have a tendency at times to disrupt the electronics and the equipment going within the building. Also want to make sure that we recognize sitting with us here is Representative Garrett. Thank you for attending today. On today's agenda, we have presentations by the Alaska Energy Authority. They will be talking about energy efficiency and conservation efforts, and we will also hear from Alaska Housing Finance, and they will also be talking about their energy efficiency program that they have. So first, Alaska Energy Authority, joining us will be Program Manager Sean and Scaling, is that how you say it? Okay. And Assistant Program Manager Katie Conway. Thank you both for being here. And please feel free to come to the mic. And if you would, state your name for the record, and then you can proceed. I do want to also point out that Representative Tuck has joined us for the record.
Hi, I'm Sean Scaling, Program Manager at Alaska Energy Authority.
And for the record, I'm Katie Conway, Assistant Program Manager for Energy Efficiency at the Alaska Energy Authority.
And I'll go first. I want to thank the co-chairs and the committee members for inviting us to speak today. In our line of work, we see lots and lots of opportunity for energy efficiency improvements that can do good for the state, and so we're pleased to share what we've been seeing and what we're currently working on with the committee.
Very good. Let the record reflect that Representative Sadler has joined us as well.
I thought it might be helpful to start with just to put a little framework to this, kind of what AEA is and where we sit within AEA. So Alaska Energy Authority is known for several different projects, like the Bradley Lake Hydro Project. We run a lot of rural tank farm replacements. The Rural Power Systems Upgrade Program is a big one where we've been fixing up and making more efficient the powerhouses in rural Alaska. The Renewable Energy Fund, of course, is what's really been putting us on the sites in recent times. And then we've had energy efficiency programs in villages in past years, and the energy efficiency programs have really been increasing. And the mission of AEA is to reduce the cost of energy for Alaska. So that's what we're working on, and energy efficiency is probably the least expensive way to reduce cost in Alaska. So we've been really ramping up our efforts in energy efficiency. One thing that we think about quite a bit, especially with all the work in renewable energy that's been going on, is energy efficiency first. Again, it's generally much more cost-effective to reduce a kilowatt hour or to reduce a gallon of gas through whatever measures you're taking rather than to generate or bring in those renewable energy or fossil fuel resources. So energy efficiency first, it was a big part of the energy pathway that was published last year, with the short-term goals being energy efficiency and the longer-term goals being more renewables. They both have to be worked on hand-in-hand, but that's... that's the way we're viewing efficiency and renewables. I have to say and apologize for all the acronyms in our slide presentation. At least as I was creating it, I was thinking of it as a visual aid and not that it would be read so much without the verbal comments. So we'll try to clarify all those acronyms as much as possible, starting on this slide with E, E, and C is energy efficiency and conservation. Efficiency is generally the technology that will reduce energy for the same outputs, and conservation is generally the human behavior aspects of it. So the next slide is a basic overview of what we're going to talk about today. We're really wrapped around the mission that you guys provided for us last year, the energy efficiency improvements of 15% by 2020. So we're taking a lot of steps to put programs together that will get us there and do some very significant groundwork to understand where we sit right now and what more fine-tuned programs, policies, and whatnot are needed to get us to that 2020 goal. So the programs that we're going to be covering, I'll go through the first three, which are kind of programmatic, and then Katie will be talking about the others. And I'll probably just get into the acronyms as we get there. So let's just jump right in. The Industrial Audit Pilot Project is energy efficiency for the industrial sector. We decided we'd start small and start with one particular sector that is that's showing to be a great first starting space, and that is seafood processors. We're building capacity within Alaska by teaming up with University of Alaska, so the Institute of Northern Engineering and the Sea Grant Marine. That's not written up there quite right, I don't think. Sea Grant Marine Advisory have teamed up together. So we've got the technical expertise and we've got the fishing expertise working together to provide these audits. Two audits have been conducted so far, and the processor, as it says there, is very pleased. They've been taking the results and planning to implement some things that are going to save them a lot of money. And the next slide, I think, is just a little picture of it, and it's a little bit funny to see, but it's a photograph of a shrink wrap oven overlaid with an infrared image that has the temperature points. And you can see the temperature points there are in the 200 and 300 degrees, and this thing is just radiating out tons of waste heat. And so they've come up with a couple of strategies to improve the efficiency of this machine, and they figure, our slides are cutting off at the bottom a little bit, but the projected energy savings is $10,000 in just 2 months. So this is, wow. Once you get into the bigger commercial and industrial processes, there's a big room for savings opportunities. That will probably translate to more jobs, more investment, and lots of other improvements for the fishing arena. Spend a little bit of time on this one, not only for the acronyms, but for the content, too. EECBG is Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grants. This is part of the stimulus package. It came out of the federal government. One of the funding sources provided grants to cities, and in Alaska, directly from the U.S. government, came grants to the 10 largest cities and 10 largest boroughs, and then they gave $5 million plus to the state to then pass on to the smaller cities. So we opened up the gates wide, and every eligible city that was eligible for the money, we tried to make a very easy process for them to apply. 97 did apply, so we have 97 cities now working with this federal money to improve the efficiency of their public buildings and facilities. In addition to that, we have a program that we call VEEP, the Village Energy Efficiency Program. It's actually a program we've had for several years under a slightly different name. And this is grants to villages. It doesn't have to be a city. It can be any small rural area for improvements of their public facilities. And out of that program, with using the stimulus money, we're also focusing deeper efforts in this whole village retrofit concept. And this is just, we've done it a couple of times already, but it's just going deep in the community just to demonstrate how much energy efficiency potential there is and what kind of economic impacts it has on the community. To make the process really easy for the cities, because the stimulus money does have a lot of bells and whistles and a lot of measurement that we need to do and a lot of job creation to calculate and lots of other things to take care of, we kept it simple for the cities, offering them a technical assistance option whereby they would work with a technical assistance provider that we would provide for the region of the state to both do all the retrofits and do all the reporting and everything else. And I was kind of shocked, 55 out of the 97 communities opted for that. And it seems like it's a really nice way to streamline, make the money go a lot further, and they get the technical assistance they need to pick the right projects that's actually going to save them the most money. Katie was calling me a techno geek here, but I just brought one little sample of something that we're thinking about, and this gets to the whole village retrofit concept. This is an LED light. The efficiency, you know, these are still changing really rapidly, but there have been really, really good improvements in recent times. And in rural Alaska, a lot of folks have put in compact fluorescents. Well, probably we all have all over the state, compact fluorescent light bulbs. But in rural Alaska, where the power quality is a little more shaky, the temperatures are sometimes very cold, and then you have a disposal issue because they have mercury inside them, we're considering something like this as a replacement. The light output, the lumens per watt that you get are about the same as the compact fluorescents, but getting better. I think it's at this point slightly better, but they last quite a bit longer. They're very durable. They do great in the cold. You need to actually plug it in so you can see. So that uses 7 watts, and it's the equivalent of somewhere between a 40 and a 60-watt bulb. But mostly, I think, when you get to the disposal issues and the longevity of them, it's rated for 50,000 hours. And then at that point, it doesn't typically fail. There are a whole bunch of different light sources in it, so one or two of them might come out. So something that we're considering.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On these LEDs, I noticed there's like heat sinks all the way around it. Do they generate a lot of heat?
No.
I didn't think LEDs did.
They generate very little heat, but the heat kills them. So they like the cold.
Oh, gotcha.
The colder it is, the happier they are. And it's another great match for Alaska, really.
And further? Follow up. And are those, I know a lot of compact fluorescents aren't dimmable. They are trying to come up new technologies where they are dimmable. Are the LEDs dimmable? Do you know?
Some are and some aren't. I'm sorry, through the chair. I have to get used to the procedure. Some aren't, some aren't. This one, for example, is. And it seems like most of them are more easily dimmable. Probably half and half at this point. Claim dimmability.
Okay. And one last question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, follow up.
What's the price difference between that and a compact fluorescent wattage equivalent?
Through the chair, the cost at this point is variable, but you can say it's roughly 5 times more as is expensive, but they last roughly 5 to 7 times as long. So for the lifespan, they're just about equivalent right now.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Representative Foster, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask maybe what the payback was, but I guess that just depends on what your electric rate is. But you said they last 5 times longer, and they cost about 5 times more. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes. Yeah, that's about correct. So at this point, they're fairly equivalent to a compact fluorescent. I think a lot of people think you have your incandescence and then, you know, compact fluorescence is next, and then the next really great efficiency thing is LEDs. But really, it's improving, but for the small lights like this, it's probably just surpassed at this point.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've never seen one of those before. Is that something that you can purchase in a hardware store right now, or is that you have to special order that somewhere?
Through the chair, I have seen some showing up in hardware stores now.
Okay.
But you really want to look for the lumens per watt. We're all used to saying, oh, I want a 60-watt replacement, but lumens per watt is where it's at. These are roughly 60 lumens per watt. The better ones these days. If you find some that are 40, you might wait a year and see if they come out with a 60. The big high-intensity outdoor style, like the street lights, I understand one model that might not be on the market yet, but is through testing, is 100, has cleared the 100 lumens per watt mark. So that's just outstanding. The best, most efficient linear lights are generally in the, 80 to 90 lumens per watt range. So the bigger light output, generally, they're a little bit more efficient.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize the technology would create such a nice bunch of questions. I should have brought more of my
You showed us the light bulbs.
Yeah.
The light bulb came on.
Thank you.
No pun intended.
Your question about return on investment. For these programs that we've had in the past, the Village Energy Efficiency Program, and to a certain extent now the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grants, although results are just starting to come in, what we're seeing on average is a payback of about 3 years. So for every, you know, $300 you put in, you're saving $100 a year, and it really adds up. What's missing on the bottom of that slide is, I think, a couple of important lines. So the estimated community savings from these programs is about $3 million a year, but the lifespan of the technology that's being put in place is at least 11 years. That's a good estimate, at least. Probably in rural Alaska, it might be longer than that. So a $33 million savings with a federal input of $8 million and a state input of $600,000. It's pretty incredible results. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, and this is a map, a little small and hard to see here, but just to give you a sense of how these grants are scattered all throughout the state. That shows both EECBG and the Village Energy Efficiency. I think that's all on that one. Go ahead. Now, just a couple more examples. This is one of our whole village retrofit sites. The Amonok Washateria, when the auditors arrived, they found this building was, I think they were saying, in excess of 90 degrees inside. And I'm not sure if that was before or after the door was open. You can't see it here, but the door is actually open. This was in October this past year, so it was below freezing. They had the controls for these dryers were broken, and so the boiler was providing very hot water to all the dryers all the time. That used a hydronic system for drying the clothes. And so it was just circulating all the time, and all the waste heat was spilling out into the building. So with new controls and a boiler tune-up, they estimate the savings is 6,000 gallons of diesel a year, or an estimated savings of about $21,000 a year. And it's, boy, you just look at that and you say, you know, I guess you can see the need. I did a little math on the 6,000 gallons, because sometimes these numbers, the big numbers, just start to float away. But that's the equivalent of driving a 25-mile-per-gallon car 15,000 miles a year for, I believe it's 10 or 12 years. It's a lot of fuel, and that's what they use. That's what was wasted in 1 year. So this is being, parts are on order now for this fix. And then it's not all about buildings, though. Napaskiak, for example, decided to take their EECBG money, their federal grant money, and put it into streetlights. So they purchased 48 LED streetlights, which reduced the per pole light use by about two-thirds, and they're saving about 1,700 gallons of diesel per year now. Go ahead with the next. Okay, this one's near and dear to my heart. This is a brand new program, just started 4 weeks ago, again started with stimulus money, only $600,000 of it. And I'm sorry, we found somewhere, oh, it's in the handout, that it says 600,000 million. Just scratch the million. It's $600,000. and we might have that handout to pass around in a moment. But this program is addressed to, is designed to address the, what I've been hearing and I've been viewing as the biggest gap in efficiency in the state, where there are no programs, there are very few services for the commercial businesses. So we put together this program not to provide the retrofits at this point, but just to provide an energy audit so that the business owner, the building owner, knows what steps they can take to become more efficient. And not only that, on a line-to-line basis, you do this measure and it costs this much and the payback is in this period of time. And so they can go through and categorize them and say, well, I'm comfortable with a three-year payback. We'll do all the ones that are 3 years and better. So it's just started, we just announced 4 weeks ago. We've had 80 plus building owners sign up for the program. The funding will allow about 125, maybe 150, depending on the size of the businesses that apply for it. And so basically in 4 weeks, we've used up about, you know, more than half the funding that's available. One thing I've seen on the information that's been coming in is there's a huge variation in the amount of energy that these buildings use on a per square foot basis, anything from 60 cents a square foot at the lowest to $12.50 per square foot at the highest. And with a range like that, you just know that there are some large inefficiencies out there. The average is about 3.25 or so, which actually isn't all that great, depending on the climate zone. I think in Anchorage, for example, one point oh would be a good number, and so you know, 3 is 3 times that. But this is across all the different climate zones. Let's see. And I do have a simple handout, a one-pager, that just describes a little bit more about this. Would you like to have that
pass out?
And I'd be happy to answer more questions on that. We could go for some time, I think, on this topic. But we're just really excited because there's a lot of opportunity. Thank you very much. We just see an awful lot of opportunity for improvements in the commercial sector. There's a ton of interest, and we'll take this as a first trial on just how much kind of need and interest and savings can be garnered out of it. I think from here, is there one more slide for me, Katie, or is that your turn? I'll turn it over to Katie for the next step.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Am I speaking close enough to the microphone?
Yeah, you can pull it towards you. Feel free. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So another acronym here is EECWG. That stands for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Working Group. And that's been a big part of my work in the last year and a lot of what I'll be talking about for the next few minutes. The Energy Efficiency and Conservation Working Group is one of the first, or one of the primary components of the Energy Authority's public education and outreach initiative for energy efficiency and conservation. This group met for the very first time at the beginning of January last year in an effort to coordinate our independent efficiency efforts. And I think the common bond among all of the organizations in this group is that everyone has some component relating to education and outreach, which is an important part of efficiency and conservation simply because it's a relatively less understood concept than its big brother renewable or alternative energy. The people or the groups making up the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Working Group range from university programs, the conservation community, federal and state program offices, tribal organizations, utilities, and some private businesses. We started out with probably 15 to 20 groups represented at our first meeting, and now we're up over 30. And that's not saying everybody's active at every meeting, but just having access to such a wide distribution of stakeholders around the state and having these folks involved in decisions relating to efficiency, coordinating among each other, and sharing information has been really beneficial for moving forward with efficiency projects. So the underlying philosophy for the EECWG is that collaborating will be a much more efficient way of reaching our efficiency goals. You can't see it on the slide on the screen, unfortunately, but I think all of you have at your desk a printout. And so if you look in the bottom right-hand corner of that, you see a little circle with an E in it. This is a symbol of our collaborative approach. This was adopted by the working group at our first meeting a year ago to represent energy efficiency and conservation in Alaska. And we're trying to get people to use this in handouts they create, in presentations they make, just so we can start drawing the public to one thing to make it recognizable, and that's a big part of awareness. First let me go into a couple of the goals. When the working group met for the first time last year, we talked about the need for better coordination. And that's something the legislature has also brought up in the past. But we think that coordination is not just important between state agencies, it's really important between all of us who work in efficiency. Information sharing is critical because we can be more efficient with our resources, our human and financial resources, if we are able to double up on maybe, for instance, trips to a specific village in rural Alaska for doing improvements, efficiency improvements. The working group called for redoing the 2008 Program and Policy Recommendations Report that the Information Insights did for the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, and that was paid for by AEA and AHFC and has been referenced considerably. In fact, I think a few of the recommendations in that were a part of legislation passed last year. And so the stakeholders sitting at the table at our first EECWG meeting last year said, well, we've come a long way. In 2 years, let's look at this report again and do it over and find out what more we can do. The working group also talked about the need for baseline energy data. It's really hard to recognize any goals or to work toward realizing those goals without having a firm understanding of exactly where we stand now in terms of energy we use, where we use it, and where the potential savings is. And then finally, the working group talked about the need for a one-stop shopping information source, whether it was a storefront like several states outside have done, or a virtual one-stop shop for energy efficiency and conservation information, just as a way of helping Alaskans tap into the resources already available and mitigating some of the confusion about who manages what programs and where money is available to help people, what kinds of technology is best applied in what parts of the state, and so forth. So one of the very first projects the working group took on was creating that one-stop shopping virtual energy efficiency resource for Alaskans. It is www.akenergyefficiency.org, and it's a work in progress, but we have come a long way, and actually last week we won second place award in a public relations professional organization in Alaska. So in terms of the look and feel of the website and its functionality, we can say we were right on, and hopefully that'll help us reach audiences all over Alaska. And again, as a part of the collaborative approach of the working group organizations are using this to broadcast events happening around the state, post job advertisements, and currently we're using it to allow commercial energy auditors to post their qualifications. So in the commercial audit, when businesses are selected, they know what the potential contractors are to do that work for them. And here's a quick picture of what the website looks like. And I do encourage you to take a look when you have a chance, maybe after session is over. One of the next things the working group did, I'm going to jump down to the last bullet on the previous slide, was apply for a grant, a competitive grant from the Department of Energy. This grant was offered to the worst performing states in energy efficiency as a way to fund programs that would bring us up to par with the best performing states. It was a competitive grant, and we won one of only 12 nationwide. The total amount of the grant funds is $700,000, broken into two phases of program implementation. And we're currently in the very beginning of phase one, in which we'll use just over half of that money. Assuming we are successful in implementing phase one, we will be able to write a proposal to DOE, and if they like that proposal, we'll receive the rest of the funding to do projects for phase two. The title of our grant application was Biggest State to Biggest Saver, and this embodies one of the goals made by the working group last year to become the most efficient state in the nation. And that's definitely on par with the 15% goal made by the legislature last year, and that has been the guide for everything the working group, and I would say much of what AEA is doing as well. I'm going to hold off on the grant for a minute and go back up one bullet here to the Energy Awareness Month. This was another project of the working group. This kicked off an integrated, sustained outreach initiative at the Energy Authority and also among many of our partners within the working group. The governor made a proclamation. It was delivered by one of his staff, and we had a very well-attended event in a building in Anchorage that happens to be the first commercial, privately-owned commercial LEED certified building in Alaska. This effort will be repeated next year and hopefully on a much larger scale, and I imagine when we have more information about this, we'll let all of you know so you can pass it on to your constituents, maybe in your newsletters or whatnot. One of the most exciting things, for me at least, within energy efficiency is what's going on because of winning this this Department of Energy grant. The projects being funded right now for this grant make 2011 a year of research and information gathering for energy efficiency, so that about a year from now, when these projects all wrap up, we'll have a much clearer idea of where the potential energy savings lies and recommendations on the best way to do that. One of the projects being funded is a community-based needs assessment that will be paired with a best practices inventory, and that's to tell us community by community, or at least region by region, where do people need help the most with energy efficiency, and what are the ways we can reach them to give them that help. Answering the working group's call for an updated version of that 2008 program and policy recommendations report. One other project being funded by the Biggest State to Biggest Saver grant is a rewrite, essentially, but bigger than what was done before, which concerned only electricity in the rail belt. This will be a comprehensive statewide study looking at both heat and power, and not just programs and policies, but also the regulatory environment shaping all of that. And the Cold Climate Housing Research Center is the project manager for that, and they'll be delivering a preliminary report to the legislature in April. Another answer to the working group, and so going back to the goals we established a year ago, is the need for baseline data. And this is a very large undertaking that is only partially funded by the DOE grant. This end-use data study will be a comprehensive statewide collection of residential and non-residential power and heat energy data. And I don't want to get into the details of the data collection because it will sound very nerdy, but it is a really exciting project, I guarantee you. And when this is wrapped up in hopefully February of 2012, we'll be able to identify more specifically where our best chances of reaching efficiency improvements lie. And finally, another piece of the grant that's a slightly smaller piece and might take a little longer to develop, but is a part of the overall mission to improve efficiency, and part of that is engaging the public, is linking the successes of energy efficiency and conservation with what we currently have mapped on the akenergyinventory.org website. Now, like I mentioned earlier, this is all part of phase one of the DOE grant, and assuming we are successful in reaching the deliverables we promised in our grant application, we'll be able to apply for the second phase of funding, and this will be the opportunity to go into communities around the state and actually engage the public and try to encourage efficiencies on the ground. I don't really know what those projects will look like, but it's pretty exciting, and this is a good opportunity for many of the entities within the working group to become involved. And that's all I have.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to welcome Katie Conway back to the legislative halls as a former employee, and welcome. You had mentioned the logo, the E logo. I was wondering if maybe we could get a copy of what the requirements are for a organization to be able to use that logo. I assume there are requirements.
Representative Foster, through the chair, we have no such requirements.
No. So maybe could you elaborate on you wouldn't want just anybody to use that if they weren't actually following the principles of that, I assume.
Representative Foster, through the chair, that's correct. We wouldn't want just anybody to use that. However, that being said, even if a private business wanted to endorse the working group and the website, this collaborative information sharing resource, by putting that logo on their work, if they engage in energy efficiency and conservation, if they're working toward the 15% by 2020 goal because of what they do for a living, I think that would probably be okay, and I think we would, you know, obviously have to have a discussion internally about that. This was an AEA project, even though it was on behalf of the whole working group. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, that's a good answer, and what I do like about that is that it encourages people. Even if they're doing something, it's better to encourage organizations to do something rather than nothing, and that's a good thing. So thank you.
Okay, quick question that I have is the monies that came through the Recovery and Reinvestment Act that you were speaking of, and of course now we have the working group working forward. Is there some of the investment that you were able to make through the stimulus funds? Is the money all spent, and now we're kind of at a standstill until we complete some of the new studies that are going forward with the working group, or kind of what's the nature and what's maybe the bridge there, if there is one?
Yes, Representative Pruitt. The money, while not all spent, is all spoken for.
Okay.
We had to have a pretty detailed plan from the beginning, and so for the commercial energy audit program, for example, we haven't actually done a single rebate yet because we're still in application form, but yet we're quite sure that it'll all go quite quickly to rebates, in fact, by December 31st of this year. So I'm sorry, forgetting a part of your question.
So pretty much the money ends at that point, and the progression that we've made, it's over at that point. And so any future might come out of what the working group is doing, mm-hmm. but we kind of have to wait until we get our research done on that. Is that
I'd say a good assessment. Okay. We're still moving forward with other programs. There are still other things happening. But this is a big research year. We're trying to take full advantage of those, basically free federal funds and just get as many strides forward as we possibly can and both set the baseline, get some good work done, try some things like the commercial audit program, and then we'll have a better sense in the future of, where the best money is to be spent.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions from the panel? All right. Well, Sean and Katie, thank you so much for taking the opportunity to be here today. I really appreciate you kind of giving us an update here and also kind of giving us a little history of our future outlook. So thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Totally agree. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right. All right. Well, next we have the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And joining us will be Carrie Bowling, Deputy Director of Governmental Relations and Public Affairs, as well as John Anderson, Weatherization Project Officer. In the audience, we should have Bob Breen. Did I say that right, Bob? Director of Research and Rural Development. Stacy Schubert, Director of Governmental Relations and Public Affairs. And online, we have from Anchorage, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director, Dan Fauske. Are you there, Dan? Okay. Well, just want to say hi, and if you have any...
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I'm online. I've got you loud and clear.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, and if you please feel free to speak up if you have anything that you want to add.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, that being said, please, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to present today.
Yeah.
My name is Kerry Bowling with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and we would just like to start off today giving you a little bit of background about the programs, the rebate and weatherization programs, how they came about briefly, and then where we are now, a little less than 3 years after these programs were initiated. So just as an overview, in 2008, that was a time of very high energy prices in the state. Oil prices were about $140 a barrel. At that time, the legislature undertook to provide some kind of relief for the citizens of the state to help reduce energy costs. And the way in which that was done was to appropriate $360 million for two programs, a weatherization program, which had been in existence for about 30 years in the state of Alaska, and that is an income-based program for both homeowners and also for renters. And if you meet the income requirements, then there's weatherization assistance at no cost. That was about a $4 to $6 million program at the time. $200 million was appropriated for that. And then in addition to that, for people who did not meet the income requirements, there was initiated and appropriated $160 million for a rebate program for people who owned their home. And the critical piece in this was the legislature wanted to make sure that people had skin in the game in this program, that they would put money up front to be able to make energy improvements and then get rebated some or all of those costs. In order to try and hit as many people as possible, these two programs went together for people who didn't have very much money and also people who did not meet the income requirements for weatherization. In fact, the income requirements for weatherization were increased so that even more people could apply for that. In the rebate program, energy ratings are required before and after energy improvements. And then depending on the amount of the improvement in the home and the eligible receipts, there were certain rebate amounts, the maximum being $10,000.
Representative Foster.
I'm sorry, on the point of the ratings that are required, one of the issues for rural Alaska was the lack of raters and the difficulty in, you know, wanting to be a part of the program but not having the access. And then if there were raters, they're just so backed up. And I know that was an issue last year. I think that there's some attempt to maybe get the folks with the regional housing authorities to be able to rate homes. Can you update us on whether anything's been done in that area?
Yes, Representative Foster, through the chair, thank you for that question. That is an issue. When we first started the program, there were only 38 raters statewide. And so that's sort of the last bullet point on this slide, is that there's a huge training and ramp-up component. Now there's about 100 raters statewide. It is an issue for some of the rural areas to be able to have a raider in those smaller communities. And so what Alaska Housing developed was a roving raider program to help subsidize the cost of raider travel to communities. If they had 3 to 5 individuals who wanted to participate in the rebate program, then HFC would help subsidize the raiders' travel out there in order to do that. More to your point, there were, with the expansion of the weatherization program, where there were 5 agencies that previously did all the work statewide, 14 regional housing authorities were brought into the fold, so to speak, to also do weatherization. And with all of those individuals, we encouraged those people in the who were the weatherization providers in the regional housing authorities to also become energy raters, so that they could also do energy ratings in villages where maybe a person didn't qualify for weatherization, but there would be somebody there that could potentially do some of those energy ratings.
Good afternoon. For the record, John Anderson, Weatherization Program Officer for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, through the chair, Representative Foster. Carrie is exactly right, and we still encourage, and our training component is still huge and ongoing. We have tweaked the rater requirement process a little bit. One of the new components is called the BPI, the Building Performance Institute certification, and we still are encouraging all of our assessors and the housing authorities to continue with our sponsored training for them to become what we're calling the authorized energy rater. Many of them have done that. There's about half of the housing authorities that were new to the program that already have that certification. Again, the frustrating part, even for on our side, was the fact that some of these smaller communities, it just did not make sense. We did allow anybody that wanted to come into the program, but still, it was, there's a lot of dollars behind training somebody in to become a raider that has a community of a couple hundred people. So we tried to be as fiscally responsible as we possibly could when we rolled this out.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I grew up in a very, very poorly insulated home out in rural Alaska, and as I went around this summer to visit with folks there, I, you know, it's, it seems to be where maybe it, at least from what I've seen, it could be the worst in terms of, you know, in houses that are drafty and so forth. And so I think the opportunity to take a you know, really make a difference, I think, is great out there. And I certainly appreciate your efforts. You know, you folks have really, you know, tried to make this work, and we'll continue to move forward. And whenever we see opportunities, I think the folks that are on the ground out there in rural Alaska are giving us some feedback as to what they see opportunities are, and we'll certainly pass those on to you as we see and try and find something that's logical and reasonable. So, but thank you for your help on that.
Now, we're always open to suggestions for improving the program, and we would welcome that input. Okay, so now, after that $360 million flood, where we were appropriated the money in April 2008, and then the governor approved that, we were asked to put that program out in that summer of 2008, which was a huge ramp-up capability. And we were able to launch in May, and now a little less than 3 years later, these are the results from the program. Energy ratings, these are the assessments that are done with the rebate program. This also includes some of the weatherization programs do ratings. Some of these are both before and after ratings combined, so there might be two ratings here, but over 37,000 ratings have been done in the last 3 years. Rebates, 11,376 rebates have been paid out to homeowners. The average rebate is about $6,200. And I'll have more details about that in the next slides. We also had a rebate for brand new, top of the energy rating scale, 5-star plus homes that were constructed. That was a rebate of $7,500 for people who purchased a new 5-star plus home. And in the past 3 years, you know what our housing market's been like. It's been a little flat, but there have been 941 new 5-star plus homes that have been built because of this program. Weatherized, the weatherization program, generally on average before this money, about 600 homes annually were weatherized throughout the state. In the past 3 years, we've had 5,003 homes weatherized. So when you add up the rebates for existing home, 5-star plus, and weatherized homes, that's 17,320 homes which are now more energy efficient since April of 2008. And just to put this in a little comparison, when we first started using our current home energy rating system called ACWARM and software, we started that back in 1996. And so we looked at the 12 years that we had data for prior to the appropriation that was done in April 2008. Looking at that before period, we did 25,557 ratings, and in the past 3 years, over 37,000. Rebate program, we did not have one at that time, so you can see we've done quite a bit since then. And then the 5-star plus homes, we have an interest rate reduction for energy efficiency that kind of drove some of the 5-star plus homes. But that's over a 12-year period doing 2,300 homes. And then weatherized, 10,704 in that 12-year period. And again, that's with a much reduced funding. And we've done 5,003 in the last three. Looking at the energy savings and carbon dioxide emissions, we did a sample. We have quite a database now, quite a valuable database of energy ratings throughout the state. And when we do a sample of what the projected energy savings before and after are, you can see what the energy costs in total before and after are, the total saved. And so that averages out, as you can see highlighted in yellow, about $1,535 per year that a homeowner is saving. Carbon dioxide reductions, about 12,000 pounds per year. Energy rating stars, that's our rating levels. Most homes are coming in at a fairly low 2-star plus home and ending up at about a 4-star home. That's what we call a 3-step improvement. And then BTUs, that's British Thermal Units, that's how you measure energy, 978 billion BTUs saved. So average energy use is reduced by about 33%. And although you can't really see it all on the slide, that's equivalent to, if you were going to equate that to something, equivalent energy savings is 168,766 barrels of crude oil that would be saved yearly, annually. 7 million gallons, that would be 7 million gallons of fuel oil, or about 700 gallons of fuel oil per year, per home. And again, those are equivalent savings, not, if you'll see in the next slide, what if you actually use these kinds of fuels, these would be what your average savings would be. And these are statewide averages, and we do have a very wide state, and you know how energy costs vary. But this is what the savings would be for electricity. It would be almost 1,000 therms, as we call them, for natural gas, saving about 640 gallons of oil per year, propane 93 gallons, 2.2 cords of wood. And again, the projected average energy cost bill reduction would be about 30% statewide. As we spoke before about the training component, again, we had to train a number of raters, but there were also a number of weatherization providers that needed to be trained, also a number of businesses that came into being and launched, building suppliers. A number of them told us that this program helped them to stay afloat during the last few years, the downturn in the economy. And we're estimating right now that 1,500 of those jobs have come from weatherization, about 1,000 from rebate. We think these are conservative numbers. We think they may be higher, up around a total of 4,000. But we've undertaking a study with ICER to confirm the progress being made on that.
If I could add, Mr. Chairman, John Anderson, one of the most difficult parts about our tracking and trying to figure out the job creation or retention is just the retention. There's so many vendors, mechanical contractors, electrical contractors, your suppliers, that we're trying to get a handle on what this program has actually done, and really basically this brand new industry that sparked up because of the rebate and weatherization program. And ICER is hoping to have that study out for us. There is some preliminary information, but it's still in draft form, and we didn't feel comfortable sharing it yet. But hopefully the final study is coming in June.
The weatherization program was received $200 million in appropriation. This is showing over the past years how much has been obligated. 2008, 2009, $74 million, 2010, $63 million, and the 2011 projection is $63 million, which will essentially finish off the program in terms of the funding. Homes weatherized. Again, as I mentioned before, prior to the appropriation of $200 million, 600 homes were done annually with weatherization in 2009, with an amazing amount of ramp up by the regional housing authorities and others. About triple that amount was done the next year, and then almost doubling that the following year in 2010. And 2011, we're expecting to do right around 4,000 homes to be weatherized. And at this point, the weatherization providers have achieved really a sustainable capacity. This is what they are capable of doing. They've had to build capacity and taken the risk of meeting the challenge to ramp up to be able to make these programs be able to do this many homes in a year.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, is it too late to get into this program? Is it too late to try to apply for weatherization or for rebate, or how much of that money is committed for the rest of 2011?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, absolutely, it's not. We continue to encourage everyone to continue to sign up. Now, our projections are pretty well what we're showing you right there, and we feel pretty confident that those are waitlisted numbers. At least we know they are for certain areas within the state. But we continue to encourage the people to continue to sign up for the program. Regardless of funding sources, it's a program that HFC has been doing since 1978, and we anticipate that to continue. The Department of Energy also contributes, on average, about $1.5 million to the weatherization program annually. Some years it's got spikes, but it's about an average of about $1.5 million. So absolutely, we encourage people to please call, and if they don't know who to contact HFC, and we'll direct them to their local agency.
Follow-up. So you said that these are waitlisted numbers. Does that mean that all the money is at least obligated by people on a waiting list?
That, through the chair, potentially that is correct. I do not have the actual 100% wait list in front of me or in our office, but we do know the Anchorage municipality, for example, has 600 waitlisted potential weatherization clients. They have to go through a pretty rigorous application process to confirm their income limits, and then they're prioritized. So there's a pretty in-depth process that goes through there. And again, we feel very comfortable with those projections from the agencies. That's where that number's coming from, is from our actual grantees.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to follow up on those two questions, there seems to be a growing demand for the weatherization program, as the chart shows, more homes being done every year. So do you think the legislature needs to appropriate additional funding to keep a large program like this moving forward?
Well, I definitely don't want to, through the chair, I'm sorry, Mr. Representative Peterson, I do not want to misspeak here. We are in the governor's budget right now for $25 million and are very appreciative of that. What we've shown you here with our results since April of 2008, we've shown you over a four-year period of what $200 million does. So right now with our projections for next year, that is as far as it goes until we have a number out there that we can continue to plan. So it does kind of put us in a difficult situation on what to do in our housing authorities and agencies. They're on my back all the time going, what can we do next year? So it is difficult for us to try to plan our future.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue.
This is just showing, again, how many communities served during over the years from 2008, 2009, and 2010, and again, you can see that we're at a capacity, a sustainable capacity of what can be done at presently. Switching over to the Home Energy Rebate Program, $160 million was appropriated for this program. Those funds are fully obligated. And what that means is that when a person gets into the program, they have their first energy rating, that they send in a reimbursement form to us, which is their application to get in the rebate program. We reimburse them $325 for that first rating. Then they have an 18-month period from the time of that first rating to complete the work, finish the program, turn in their paperwork. So once they get in, we obligate those funds for them and hold it for them for 18 months. And we did this at the request of the legislature because we didn't want people to get into this and spend $10,000 and then get to the end and say, oh, HFC can't add up, can't add correctly, and we don't have any funds for you. So we obligate those funds to make sure that when they get at the end of the process, there is funding available for them for their rebate.
So just a question on that. So when an individual gets the initial, and I'm trying to remember the process here, when they get the initial rating.
Energy, correct.
It's not that initial rating with that rater that gets them into the process. It's once they submit and get that initial first $325, starts the process, that's where the 18 months begins.
That's when their application, that's when we know that they're going to be in the program. Now, they start actually when they had the rating.
Now, is there still people that are sending in those applications?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there is an issue at times where people don't realize that they need to send in their application. They have the rating and they wait rather than sending it in. And what we have told them in all our information that we put out, that there's no advantage to waiting to do that. In fact, it can be a detriment. We would want to know right up front that you're going to be in the program, because we don't want them to get to the end of the program and turn everything in and there may be no money available, because we don't have any record of them actually wanting to participate.
Okay. Representative Lynn.
I'll be able to report to you later on how this whole thing works, because when I left the session last year, I made a telephone call. I just to get an inspection. And I just received a call last week. They're ready to come out. I said, well, that's the good news. The bad news, I'm down at Juneau. So they're going to call me about a week or so before we adjourn, hopefully in April. So when I get back up there, I'm going to try to make an appointment for them to come inspect my home, which is pretty drafty. I can tell you that without being rated here. They'll look at that about a week or so after I get back up and unpack, and then depending on what they find, then I'll make the application, and we'll see how it works. Maybe I can report to the committee, make sure it's first-hand information.
Yeah, very good. Now, Representative Peterson.
Well, along that same line, I actually have gone through the process, signed up to have a rating done in spring of 2009, got my rating in September of 2009, and had the work done last summer and turned in my paperwork in sometime in late August, and received my rebate check right around the middle of December. And so I actually went from a 2+ to a 4+, so I was a slightly better improvement than average. And, I think the program works fine. I have heard from constituents that think that the program has ended because they're on a waiting list and have been waiting. And the money, I try to explain the fact that the money is encumbered. There's still money in the program. And as the 18-month time period for people runs out, then the $10,000 that was put away to be used to give them a rebate that they don't apply for then goes back in, and that becomes available for someone else to use. So that, I believe that's how it works.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Peterson, that's exactly correct. I liken it to going to a restaurant. When the restaurant's empty, you can fill up his tables as quick as you want, and there's no waiting. But once everybody's seated, then you have to wait for somebody to finish their meal before somebody else gets to sit down.
Right, so. Right. Representative Lynn.
I just going to say that one of the people who call me, and I guess you made a referral to somebody, the folks who called me said, well, you can get another family member down there to go with them. I said, no, I'd like to be there when they go through the house so I can discuss things. And another thing is I didn't want the clock to start running on that 18 months until I'm there. I can actually do something and perhaps shop for whatever they recommend.
Through the chair, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah,
that would be what we would recommend, is to be there, and because it's very, one of the other great things about this program is when the rater comes in, they will show you what are the improvements to make, as well as providing the report. But it's been a very good learning experience. We've also put money into teaching people how the program works. We have YouTube videos on it. We have a consumer guide. We also sponsor classes for consumers on how to actually make the improvements if they want to do it themselves or they want to hire somebody to do the work.
Thank you.
If I may add to the chair, Representative Lynn, and once you were dispatched from the call center, your name will be secured. That is the other thing. You have an extenuating circumstance, which we have a committee at HSC that deals with extenuating circumstances, extensions to the program. So we really try to take everybody's issues at heart and try to deal with them. And you are right. I would be in the same boat that you are. I would want to be there also. So I believe that's the correct call that you've made.
I don't want the burglar showing them around the house.
So with that being said, you know, kind of to follow through with those, I'm sure there's still a lot of interest from the public in this. People that are going to start submitting and will find out, you know, of course, everything's encumbered. Are you getting feedback from people, from public, that's saying, hey, well, I guess I shouldn't be a part of it? Or is that discouraging people from upgrading and creating energy efficiency in their own homes?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would say that that's true. There is some belief out there that there is no funding. There is funding, but it's very limited. There's a long wait period now, and on my next slide or so, you'll see how that
actually
works.
I figured probably would.
But that is true, and I think it is in a way because of the funds being fully obligated that it is discouraging individuals who might otherwise apply.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Dan Fauske, correct?
Yes, sir. If I may, just for a second, I know Kerry will get to it. The answer to that, I mean, right today there's 3,000 people on the waiting list. So that's a testimony to the desire by folks. And in my travels and the way I move around and places I get to, I've never seen anything quite like this program in the sense of once people figure out who I am or if they know who I am, the response I get by people coming up and wanting to participate or those that have participated, how satisfied they are. I have to admit, I'm so proud of this. I've never really seen anything quite like it in terms of the bang for the buck that people are getting. And as Kerry will show in upcoming slides where the skin in the game theory and it's fairly extensive what people are doing. So I just wanted to say that the desire for people to use this program is intense. We've tried to hold back by creating too much expectation in the sense of mass advertising and others because we're waiting on the funding requests and others going forward so you don't raise people's expectations too high. But I can guarantee you when that money hits and if it hits, I know we got to go through the session here, but that list and the excitement by the public will be actively reflected. We will keep track of that for you. But it is a popular program.
Okay. Very good. And just for the record, please identify yourself and your affiliation.
I'm sorry. This is Dan Fauske. I'm the CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
All right. I knew that. But thank you so much, Dan, for playing a part with that. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Please continue.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and as you can see, although the funds are fully obligated, we've expended $88.6 million so far. This is showing how many people are actually in the program or have been in the program in terms of these are people who have actually had their first, what we call our as-is rating, their first rating, and have sent in the paperwork to us. They've been reimbursed the $324,956 individuals. And I think the other information I've already talked about in terms of the existing homes paid, the average rebate amount, the participation rate, this is the number of people who get in the program and then actually complete, 63.3%. And that's held pretty steady for about a year. And we track that very closely so that we can then have an idea of what money will be recycled back into the program for others to participate. And then the five-star plus homes paid. This is a little explanation of the wait list. If you see, at the beginning of the program, when it was first launched, people contacted energy raters individually. That caused a huge problem with customer service and people not getting back, huge demand, an inability to meet the demand. So we set up a call center, a centralized wait list back in the fall of 2008. And so what you're seeing is in December of 2008, these are how many people are on the wait list. You have to remember that during this time, December, all this time, people are coming into the program and being dispatched. So even though it says 9,000 up there, there's a lot more that have been dispatched. In total, there's been over 31,000 ratings dispatched from the call center. So as you see, in December 2008, 9,000, and then in December of 2009, a year later, that wait list statewide has gone down to practically nothing, 463 individuals. At that point, the funds were fully obligated. So the restaurant, if you will, is full. There's plenty of raiders and waiters. But you're waiting for people to finish. So at this point, it causes the program to rebuild the wait list. So people are waiting in line, waiting to get in, and that gets longer as we wait for those funds that aren't utilized to be recycled back into the program. So currently, the wait list is around 3,500 people statewide.
And if I could add, Mr. Chairman, we are currently dispatching, based on the recycled funds and the restaurant theory that Kerry was telling you, roughly 100 names per week of recycled people on that 63% participation. So as we're tracking it, and as the recycled funds come back in, it's averaging about 100 names per week currently that we are still continuing to dispatch.
Representative Lynn.
In my case, it was 9 months from the time I asked for an inspection until I got the call last week. So that's about average, it looks like.
Through the chair, that's correct. The average wait time looks like it's right now is about eight months. If you were to get on the list today.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So earlier in the presentation, you said you had about 100 qualified raters statewide. So are we going to start losing some of these raters to other jobs if there's only 100 ratings coming in? There's not going to be enough work to keep them busy, right?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson. You're exactly correct. In fact, we have already lost roughly a handful because of this. Most of the energy raters came into this very eager that were already involved in either home inspection or other type of energy affiliations that they were tied to. So this was really an add-on to what they were already doing. But we have lost a couple just because of the lack of the demand.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Please, gentlemen, proceed.
And this is just to give you an idea of looking at a sampling of 11,800 homeowners, what they've actually spent. The average person spends about almost $11,000. They get an average rebate of over $6,200. And then so the homeowner investment is about $4,500. And what you can't see in the slide that's showing behind you is that the annual energy savings is about $1,535, so that's about a three-year payback for the homeowner side of the investment. So you can see people do actually have an investment in the program and do put the money out for this program.
And if I could add, Mr. Chairman, this was a very important part of the original legislation from Senator Hoffman also, that we needed to make sure that people had skin in the game, that this wasn't a giveaway program. And it's proven to be just that. Even on a three-year payback, this money is recycling so many times through the various communities, it really is difficult for us to track. But that was one of the original intentions of that legislation, was to make people have skin in the game. So.
Was not too much skin.
For those individuals who did not have the money up front, we also have at Alaska Housing a second mortgage for energy conservation as an option, $30,000 at a 15-year fixed rate, what do we call our taxable rate. And so far we've had about 93 of those, and there are 33 active.
Okay.
and that is combined with the rebate program. So when people use this in combination with the rebate program, their rebate actually goes to pay down the loan.
Oh, this is fascinating. Yeah, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If a person is in a small community, a village, where how would that work? For example, if you're in a city, it would be easy to get a mortgage, second mortgage from a bank. You've got to have somebody come out and assess your house and so forth. But how does that work out in a small community?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, these are actually serviced by Alaska Housing. They can contact us via the website or via our phone. Contact information, and if they want one of these and they qualify, HFC will make it happen.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Please continue.
So just in summary, looking back over the last little less than 3 years, 17,320 homes completed, reduced energy costs 30%, reduced energy savings 32%, created 2,500 jobs at a minimum. We think that's conservative, projections to 4,000. Achieved an annual capacity of 4,000 weatherization program homes, and all funds are obligated. At that point, that concludes our presentation on the rebate and weatherization program. If you have any further questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
Go ahead.
Have a few slides on our revolving loan program, if that's of interest.
Yeah. Representative Sadler.
Chair, just a general question, sir. Is this a program that's been replicated or outside? Is this something other northern states have done? Or just kind of how does Alaska fit in the national context here?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. Yes, in fact, the rebate program has been shared with many outside entities, including the Secretary of Department of Energy, also of the housing on federal levels. There is proposed legislation right now on a national level called HomeStar, and HomeStar actually mimics this rebate program that we've created. So they haven't specifically given us credit for it, but it is almost to the T on their Gold Star model for the HomeStar. On the weatherization side, this has been an ongoing program on a national level since 1978 that all the states do. So one of the benefits with the new money in 2008 from you all was the ability to increase the income limits to the 100% of medium income, where the DOE restrictions are 60% of poverty. So it's a very, very different income threshold for the federal funds.
Okay. One last question I have. You mentioned earlier $25 million. Is that just the weatherization, or is that the weatherization and the rebate program?
Mr. Chairman, that was $25 million for both programs.
Okay. And about how many of the people that are sitting there waiting would we cover with that?
On the rebate program, roughly 2,000, and on the weatherization program, roughly 1,000.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions before we have move to the next? Representative Foster.
Did we have another?
We have the Energy Revolving Loan Fund. The two more slides, I believe, that they have.
I'll hold my comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please continue.
With in the last session, the legislature approved with the Alaska Sustainable Energy Act, the Senate Bill 220. A $250 million revolving loan fund that was to make energy efficiency improvements for regional educational attendance areas, University of Alaska, state facilities, and municipal facilities. The idea behind this is what is called energy performance contracting, where you guaranteed savings from energy efficiency improvements are used to pay off the loan, and there is a retrofit energy assessment for the loan before the loan is made. There's an energy assessment that's done, sort of like the rebate program, just to evaluate what the paybacks for certain things are, what the recommended or best energy conservation measures would be. And to shorten that, we call that REAL, R-E-A-L. This required prior to the loan, there's an initial project evaluation or energy benchmark. Then there are energy audits by certified energy auditors or certified energy managers. These are a national certification through the Association of Energy Engineers. We will also approve an HFC equivalent to that. And then the energy performance contracts, again, energy service companies, or ESCOs, are qualified by AHFC and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and these may be used to actually do the work on the homes, on the buildings, and get to guarantee the energy savings. The retrofits may be managed by these ESCOs, or the facility owner can manage them if it's under a certain amount, in this case, $250,000. I'll let Mr. Anderson continue.
Mr. Chairman, if I can elaborate a little bit, we have a complete separate PowerPoint slide for this, but we probably do not have time and didn't even bring it to prepare for this. We just wanted to touch base on an overview real quick of how the program does work. It is still in final phases of development. We have our contractors selected. We are making the initial contacts with the school districts, the municipalities. We work very close with the Department of Transportation on their efforts for the same program. They have already done their solicitation for the ESCOs, the contractor piece, and they're going down the same road that we are, basically holding our hand to get these buildings inventoried and get the benchmark data so we can actually start performing the audits.
Representative Sadler.
A silly question, maybe, but what's a couple examples of an energy service company? You know, what kind of companies are you talking about, contractors or?
Through the chair, Representative Sutter, yes, it is. There are certain requirements in national associations where you are considered an energy performance contractor, which ties to having the training behind you for building science, for mechanical, for HVAC, for that type of process. I can give you an example of a few of them. Siemens is a company. Ameresco, Johnson Controls, Honeywell, these are all major national companies. This program is not new by any means. The Corps of Engineers on the federal government through the Department of Energy and Department of Defense have been doing this for years. And the Department of Transportation for the state has actually, who we went to initially for the process, they've actually completed about 17 buildings in the state already using this model. So that's really kind of the model that we're following. Again, there's a national accreditation. It's the National Association of Energy Professionals is one of the requirements that we're going to put on these contractors. We are also going to add on to that some Alaska-specific cold climate building technologies that we feel very comfortable with that we believe should be a requirement. Arctic Technical Engineering might be another one that we are looking at right now.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, having seen the whole presentation and these programs both seem to be in high demand by Alaskans, and just looking at the rough math, obviously $25 million is not going to sustain these programs at the current levels that we've had. What kind of funding would you like to see, and what kind of funding would be necessary to continue these programs at the current rate?
Well, through the chair, Representative Peterson, at the current capacity and where we've ramped up to right now, $100 million a year is very easily achievable on these two programs.
Thank you.
Short and sweet. Does anyone else have any? Representative Foster.
If there are no other questions, I just wanted to make a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Maybe there are other questions, but I did want to say that until we figure out fusion and how to make that work, you know, technology of the future, I think that the work that you folks do, both at the AEA with the energy efficiency and the conservation, as well as the HFC with energy efficiency rebates, weatherization, I think that's going to be critical to our moving forward. There are no home runs here. We're going to be, you know, hitting singles and doubles on this, and I think, you know, taking pieces of all the tools that we have are going to be so important. And with this one, it's easy. You know, you're saving having to use a gallon of fuel rather than create either a new technology that you're bringing in or finding out some way to bring the cost of fuel down, and it's an easy fix, and it also creates jobs in the local communities. And so I just want to you know, thank you, and I think I share the sentiment that Representative Peterson has in that you know, trying to get funding out there to this program, I think is going to be important to expand it. And so, thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
This is Dan Fosky. May I speak, sir?
Yes, please go ahead.
And echoing Representative Foster, I'd like to thank the committee and my staff. I thought I was really pleased with how the information flowed. Another thing to remember is the life cycle of the homes. We're going into people's homes, some of which are in pretty dire straits, and we're making improvements that increase the life of that home quite a bit. And the quality of life is also enhanced. And so, along with the things you mentioned, Representative Foster, this is just a win-win program. And I'm not saying that, I say it as an Alaskan. I just am so impressed with how this is going. And I appreciate the questions and the comments. And I'm very proud of how all of us have worked together to create something that is truly the envy of many states and other agencies when they see how we're doing. And John Anderson touched on it earlier, but when the Deputy Secretary of DOE was up here and then and subsequent to the Secretary, they were pretty amazed at what we're doing in our state. So we all owe ourselves a little pat on the back, I think, for what started out a few years ago has turned into just a valuable program around this state. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Well, I'd like to say, I'd like to follow up just one last thing. You said $100 million you could do this. How many years could you go out at $100 million?
Mr. Chairman, we figure that would secure us until 2013, March of 2013.
And then the...
And we would be right back here doing this again.
I guess let me go back on my question. How many years... What do you project? Of course, you have the people that have already put the interest in, and they've been dispatched. And that, if we had this program one more year, would we see the need probably for $100 million the following year? And in how many years would we see? When do we start to get where that curve starts to go down? Is kind of what I'm going at.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I actually can address that a little bit in. The allocations when the money first came out in April of 2008, we did an allocation workbook, very detailed, that encompasses the fuel data, our heating degree days, and we estimated that the $300 million originally was going to take care of about 10% of the need of the state.
Okay.
And then, of course, we got the additional 60 in 2009 to help on the rebate side. So that really is the number. We probably 12-13% is what we feel we're accomplishing with the original 360.
So there's really a huge need out there. Representative Sadler.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And to assume that to help avoid that curve, I assume new construction codes already have weatherization up to these levels. Are we building nothing but 4- and 5-star homes now in terms of new construction codes?
Through the chair, that is correct. If they are getting any HFC funding, they have to follow the B standard, which is our building energy efficiency standards. We believe that there are most entities and financing agencies within the state are requiring our B's requirements anyway. We are hearing, and there are some areas of the state that, you know, people are still building the cabin or that they don't really have plans or follow any type of a standard, but we feel very comfortable in it, and if they want AHFC money, it has to follow that standard.
Okay.
And just to follow up, that standard right now would be equivalent to a 4-star plus home.
Well, very good. I don't know about the rest of you. I think this is very informative, helping me understand where the program is now and what to expect in the future. Before we allow the gentleman to leave, is there any other questions or comments that the panel has?
I'll let you know after they do the inspection.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think we can be very proud as a state to have come up with a program that is the envy of all the other states. And I think it would be very short-sighted of us if we did not continue this program in the future to continue to help Alaskans to make their homes more energy efficient.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Peterson, for that. John, Carrie, thank you so much for being here, for your presentation. Like I said, it was very informative, and I appreciate you taking the time. That actually will wrap up this hearing today. Our next meeting will be next Tuesday, which is February the 8th. We will be discussing reports from the Alaska Sustainable Energy Act of 2010. Each of the members should have received the packet on Tuesday. We'll be going over that packet. And if there's no further business, this meeting is adjourned. It is 4:35.